Okay, hello listeners. This is another, well, it's the second edition of the Shinare Safari podcast. This is for anyone who wants to know more about the Gurfic agenda and Shinare. And I talk to various members of staff who work in roles supporting pupils at universal, targeted and specialist levels. So the first podcast, I hope you've had a listen, that's with the school counsellor Angela Park. And today I'm joined by the SW for the school, Lindsay. And what's your second name again, Lindsay?
It's Lindsay Still.
Thank you, Lindsay. It's completely slipped my mind there for a second. Lindsay Still. So we're going to have a chat with Lindsay about what her role is. So just we'll start with just if it's okay with you, Lindsay. Well, first of all, how are you today?
Yeah, I'm okay. I didn't get much sleep, but I'm fine.
you weren't too happy about Roger Federer losing
devastated.
In the quarterfinals of the US Open.
Yeah, I was devastated. Watching it till about 4:30 this morning.
Were you?
Yeah.
Oh my word. Oh dear. Okay. I know how much you like Roger, so
I'll get over it.
You'll get over it. Okay.
Eventually.
Okay, so we'll maybe start just with a little bit of chat about what the role of the ESW is.
Okay.
Yeah.
So ESW stands for Education Social Worker.
Okay.
And within like Aberdeen City, all the schools, all the secondary schools have got a allocated education social worker to them. The idea is that we work with young people and or their families who may be struggling for like a variety of reasons. And so we might do some direct work with young people and their families. But what we might also do is work with guidance teachers or specific class teachers to help support them to understand maybe what's going on for young people in order to help them access school a bit more happily. And there's like a couple of other things that we aim to do, which is the child's plan. Is that something you're aware of?
Yeah.
So child's plans are kind of across the whole of Scotland, and schools are kind of in charge of really holding the child's plan unless there's specialist involvement from social work. Because I work in education, I'm not one of those social workers that would have the authority to kind of have a statutory role. So what I can do is I can help guidance teachers or school staff with the writing of the child's plan, because I come from a slightly different perspective, basically, than the school staff. And the third thing that I do, which is kind of similar to that, is just building capacity within schools. So like you were speaking about universal levels. So I would maybe do some work with a group of staff around attachment or child development or specific things like emotion coaching. So I can do that with staff, but I could also do that with parents or with young people.
Okay. So three main roles: supporting young people and families, child's plan, and building capacity. So
yes.
In terms of your time, is it like a one third split, or is there one thing you do most of?
I think what people would want me to do is probably do most direct work with young people and their families, or actually probably most direct work with young people.
Yeah.
But I think, like, I see it as I don't really want to just work with children on their own, so I work with the whole family as much as possible. So probably most of my time is taken up with that, to be honest. But we get referrals through, and basically I can kind of make a decision alongside the school nurse and a transition teacher about how best my resource should be used.
Yeah, okay, so it's yourself, transition teacher, school nurse.
Yeah.
Just the three of you decide how to allocate cases, etc.
So we have like a education psychologist as well, who should be there as well, but she's on maternity leave just now. It's like the idea is that we've got representation from education, from social work, and from health, and that because the three areas are coming together, we've got a better kind of take on how to support kids in a more kind of holistic way. That's the idea.
Okay, so is most of your work, is it done in school, out of school? How much time are you in school versus out?
I'm mostly in school. I see most, if I'm doing direct work with kids, that is usually in school, depending on the situation. So I was saying earlier that we're attached to secondaries, but we work with on the feeder primaries as well. So like with Harlaw, it's Ferry Hill, Broom Hill, Came Hill and Hanover Street. So I work within all those schools as well.
Yeah.
And yeah, mainly I'm in the school, but if there's a reason for me to kind of work in the home with a young person first, then I'll do that to like maybe build a relationship up with, with the young person.
Yeah.
In terms of like families, it's the same. It just, it really depends if the family are more comfortable working at home or if it's better for them to be in school. So I'll have parents coming in to work with me individually.
Yeah.
In my,
yeah.
my wee office that we're
in
just now.
Little office, cozy little office. I like it. Yeah. You got a window.
Yeah, I do have a window. It's really high up and I can't reach it. But you know, apart from that, it's fine.
And in terms of primary versus secondary split, is that roughly equal? Do you find yourself more?
It's equal, right. Yeah. And it's, which is really good, because actually, like across the city council, like all the other city schools, it seems to be much more secondary school that take up the ESW times. But at Harlaw, I put a real emphasis on kind of trying to get involved, or what's called early intervention, which. From my take, because loads of people have views of what that means, my take is that early intervention is getting involved at the earliest time when things have started to go wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I see it. So what we use is a thing called early indicators of need. So we notice when things are starting to go wrong and we get referrals in. Basically,
okay.
that's kind of how it works. And the idea is to like prevent escalation of problems or... to kind of divert them to you know, a better service that might more helpfully.
So I suppose that's how I would understand what early intervention would mean, but what other ways can people understand that?
So people just sometimes think it's just younger kids, basically. So, you know, some people might just think early intervention is the younger the kid, the earlier the intervention, but actually it's about it being at the right time. So it's about it being at the earliest time when there's been a problem.
Yeah.
So that could be primary one. It could be primary six, it could be fourth year, you know, it depends on kind of what's happened. But also, it depends, it's really complicated. It depends on things like, you spoke about universal, targeted and specialist. So for instance, social work might see that they're coming in at an early intervention stage, but to us it would be beyond the targeted.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because they won't get involved until it's reached a certain threshold, but to them that might be seen as early intervention, but to us it wouldn't be.
Mm-hmm.
So there's this kind of tension and confusion around what that means. But I think...
Well, someone at the door. Listen, we know we're recording a podcast here, but you're always welcome.
Hi.
I know you like being recorded.
She's not happy.
Oh, she's away.
Oh, well.
Right.
Yeah, so that's early intervention. It's a bit, it's one of those things that is thrown around loads, but people don't always have quite the right handle. Well, not the right handle on it, but the handle that I have on it.
Yeah.
You know what I think
it means
it
different
is.
Things
yeah,
to different people.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, none of them are wrong, but they're just kind of different.
Okay. No, I get that. Okay. Right, what other sort of areas was I wanting to look at with you? What about, just really briefly, your own career? How long have you been on AESW for?
14 years.
14 years, yeah,
yes,
okay.
14 years. Okay. So I did social, I did physiology and anatomy at Aberdeen University, and then I did not like that. And I sort of went away, left Aberdeen for quite a while, and then I came back and then decided to do social work. So so I did that, and then I went into working at a voluntary agency called Drugs Action for a few years.
Okay, I've heard they're still going, I think.
They're still going,
yeah.
Still got quite a lot of colleagues there that I'm still friendly with. And then I moved into education social work.
Yeah. Oh, good. Okay. And in terms of the job satisfaction, like what are the most rewarding? I guess if you've done it 14 years, there must be elements that you like and get satisfaction from.
Yeah,
maybe some days you have to think harder about what these things might be.
No, do you know what I don't know. I think I'm maybe an anomaly because I actually really love what I do, like all pretty much all the time. It's really challenging at times, but I really believe in what I do, and so because I really believe in it and want to do it, it sounds really boring, but want to do it the best of my abilities, like I actually get a lot of job satisfaction out of that. And there's although there's been like really difficult things happen along the way, I just think it's a privilege to be able to work with these young folk and their families. Like they let you in and they let you work with them, and that's pretty good.
Yeah.
You know, it's pretty good of them to do that. And the best things obviously are when things change for the better.
Yeah. Good.
So yeah.
Good. Well, that's positive.
Yeah. It is. It is. To be honest, it does. Good. I do. I really like it.
That's good. And in terms of challenging aspects, what would be the most challenging aspects?
Probably like resources. Again, a bit of a boring answer, but so it just feels as though money that is being spent on the early intervention stuff is getting less and less.
Mm-hmm.
And schools in particular, it feels like, are being asked to do more and more.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, it's fine for schools to be asked to do more, but I feel like it's maybe not, the balance isn't quite right for school staff, school-based staff, to be able to do the best job that they can with the resources that they have.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there needs to be some thought around that. I know that there is loads of thought around that, but the reality is that we don't have enough money.
Mm-hmm.
So posts go and people go and it makes it harder for everyone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I agree in terms of classroom teachers, for example, would maybe want to be more skilled or able or confident.
Confident, I think, is a big one,
a lot of areas. And time.
Yeah.
Time's a big factor with that as well. Where do they get the time to do that?
Totally. And like, I speak to staff who are saying, you know, I feel as though, again, going back to the child's plan, I feel as though I'm being asked to do like something that maybe is more suited to social work, you know, than actually teaching, you know, in terms of their, not just their skill set, but what they've actually literally been trained to do. Mm-hmm. It's really, there's more to it. And, you know, I don't think there's many teachers would disagree that relationships are massively important, and building good relationships and effective relationships with kids is a hugely important part of their job. But it's not just as simple as that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's really difficult, which is why I love what I do as well, because I get to kind of bridge that a wee bit and maybe ask those kind of more uncomfortable questions or kind of focus on that side of things a bit more.
Mm-hmm.
Which hopefully benefits families, but also the staff as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So quite another question I had was in terms of Shinari indicators. Hopefully you don't take this as a test of, do you know the Shinari indicators?
Well, luckily I've got them up on my wall here.
That's good, because I would need that as well. But just which ones or one do you find yourself working on the most?
That is really difficult. I think probably safe, healthy and responsible are probably the ones I work on the most.
Mm-hmm.
Probably. It's really difficult. I think maybe it's easier to say I probably don't work on achieving quite as much, because I kind of leave that to the school to tell me how people are achieving, and that's kind of impacted by all the other ones. And active, I don't put a massive focus on that, although like I might ask young people how they spend their time and kind of what kind of activities they do, but generally speaking I don't get too involved in that one.
Less so. Okay.
But with like safe and healthy, it's like the safe one, it's not just about like their like tangible safety, it's more about emotional safety as well, which is much harder to kind of gauge. And the same with healthy, it's like emotional health. Physical health is much easier to kind of evidence, but things like emotional health and emotional safety are trickier to kind of, you know, to really put your finger on what's going on there and sort of help folk understand why those things are important.
Just thoughts are coming in my head there about you know, it's clear to speaking to you, you've got a lot of knowledge and experience about what you're saying there about emotional safety, and a lot of people might not know exactly what that means.
No,
I wasn't going down that route, because I think I know roughly. I think I get you. And in terms of skilling up staff, like, I guess you could put on a lunchtime or after school CPD thing on that, but really I think what if it was me and I wanted to know more about it, I'd like to work closely with you day to day for a period of time with a particular pupil or pupils in mind. I think that's the way that you
experiential sort of learning and really seeing the nitty-gritty of how that actually comes into like fruition, as you know, because we write assessments, for instance, on, you know, that might be a subject, the heading of an assessment that I do is emotional safety, and actually how you get to the blurb that you actually write about it, how do you get there from the work that you do.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
What does that turn into in terms of making that better for kids?
And I suppose we've worked together on with various people in the past, but it's like you've done your bit of work, I've done my bit of work, and we've communicated about that.
Yeah.
But we've not necessarily worked very closely.
Totally.
Do you do that ever with other class teachers? Have you done that?
Not particularly.
I mean, it's time consuming to do
it. It is, but I think the thing I work probably most closely with teachers on is probably when we write a wellbeing assessment, which effectively can turn into the child's plan.
Yeah.
So what I like to do, I wouldn't ever write that in isolation based on my views. What in the best, my view, the best practice would be to collaborate on that properly, not just put one person onto that job. So what I would do is maybe sit with a guidance teacher and really go through the wellbeing indicators, having worked with the young person, worked with the parents or carers, and kind of had my own ideas about it, and then work with the guidance teacher and kind of put that all together in a way that makes sense. So I like to do that alongside. I wouldn't ever want to do that kind of in isolation. I do that with the school nurse as well. We've done that for, you know, a couple of kids that we both know. It just makes a much more robust assessment, you know, that I think saves a lot of trouble, because often what happens is you write things like that and they get sent back saying, well, there's not enough information about this, or and so I kind of feel like we'd really need to have good partnership working. Working alongside people is great. I, you know, like the school nurse as well, I've done groups with parents with the school nurse. With a Bernard Arduous worker, I did a parenting group with them as well up at primary school.
Just for me, I don't know, I find it a really good way to learn. But working closely with other people who've got an expertise. So what about your own well-being, apart from watching Roger Federer,
which is not good for my well-being?
Are you good at looking after your own physical and mental well-being? What things do you do that contribute in some way towards that?
I suppose, yeah, I'm quite healthy, I suppose. I do quite a lot of sport. I think that helps me. I don't necessarily think about it in terms of my kind of emotional or sort of mental well-being, but I know that, like, running, for instance, really settles my brain. I don't necessarily think about it in that way before I go running, because what I really want to do is beat my last time, because I'm quite competitive. So, you know, there's that as well. But I think, generally speaking, like, I'm pretty active, and I do loads of reading, and, like, I like downtime. Like, I like just relaxing with, like, my kids and stuff. But I'm not great at something I know you're quite good at, which is, like, the mindfulness kind of stuff. I'm not good at that. I think that is an area that I should work on, because I find it really hard to be still and at peace. I find that really difficult. I think I should probably work on that.
What do you do if you're having a bad day, or someone's really annoyed you, or if you're like having a right moment? Have you got a go-to thing that you do, or?
Music, maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe. I've got a variety of things. Do you know what I do sometimes? Is I just watch, like, things on YouTube, like Roger Federer like passing shots. That really calms me. Or I watch Michael Johnson, who's the best 400 meter runner back in, like, 1992, 96. I watch him doing his 400 meter race and, like, winning by so far. It just, like, makes me feel really happy.
Who would win a race, a 300 meter race between Usain Bolt and Michael Johnson?
Michael Johnson.
You think, yeah.
It's, but to be honest, I've been caught out in this before, because I bet my brother, when Michael Johnson got the 200 meter world record and the 400 meter world record in the same Olympics, I bet him that nobody in our lifetime would beat his record, and both of them have gone. So, you know, I've got form of being wrong on that, but he still is my absolute favourite.
Yeah, he was. He was good.
He's amazing. Yeah. He shouldn't have been amazing, because he had a terrible style, but he was.
Yeah, kind of.
He was totally. He was really upright.
Funny looking runner.
But he was just insane. It was amazing. So things like that. I watch things that inspire me. Probably is maybe a good way of putting it.
Okay, I like that. Yeah. Okay. Thank you. I think I've got a couple of questions left. I was going to ask you about improvements to the role. I mean, you said that one thing as a challenge with the role is resources. So my question about what improvements would you make to the role of the SW? I guess more resources would be one. Is there anything else you would add to that?
I think more resources being bodies for me would
yes,
be
more
like
of you.
Yeah, I think so. Like, yeah, I just feel like all schools say there's a need for it, so I think there's sometimes a bit of a thing where people might agree with stuff like that, but they don't actually put their money where their mouth is on it. And so, like, my feeling is that if we can do our job well at the right time, then it prevents a lot of things. Can prevent a lot of things later on, but it's difficult to say, oh, well, money should be put to there instead of to these crisis cases that exist as
yeah.
well. So
yeah.
you know, but yeah, resources and better, like, statistics.
Okay,
I'm quite into, like, evidencing impact, and so uh-huh. I think I'd like somebody who knows about things like that,
mm-hmm.
which is not me. To kind of give us a really good tool of how we can, what we can use and how we can measure that impact. I do it in my own way, and kind of the other ESWs do it similarly, but I just think it would be good to have a really clear evidence-based kind of way of recording.
Yeah.
That.
Is there a specific thing or things that we could be measuring better?
So, I think so, because I think a lot of what we do is like qualitative stuff and not necessarily statistically based,
yeah.
but in order for us to say justify, actually we should have more ESWs, this is what we do, I think we need to have that other part
mm-hmm.
as well. And it's a notorious thing in like social work or social sciences that it's really difficult to measure.
Mm-hmm.
But the way that I measure it here is I measure it in terms of, so I would classify myself as being coming in at the targeted phase from the universal, targeted, and specialist, like that continuum. I'd say I'm in targeted, and what I do is when I close a case, I measure where we are on that. So my idea would be that if that young person has gone back down to universal support, then that's been a successful intervention, for
yeah.
instance. That's one one bit that I would would measure it by, would be the,
yeah.
the level of, like, the continuum of need.
Well, it sounds like you're thinking about these sorts of things more than a lot of people already, and if there's any data crunchers out there who could help
yeah.
advance,
oh,
take Lindsay to the next next level.
That would be very well.
Data crunching,
because it kills me.
Okay.
I don't mind it. If I know what I'm doing, I don't mind it. It's just when I'm kind of doing it from scratch, it's kind
yeah.
of.
Well, you're talking to someone that doesn't. I just avoid Microsoft Excel.
Oh, do you?
I
do
yeah.
it on the Google Drive now, and it's almost mind blowing. Like, I get really excited. You can just
right. oh,
you can
wow.
just write in a statement and it'll tell you the answer based
oh.
on what you put in. It's way easier than Excel.
Oh, I'll have a look then.
Yeah,
okay.
yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I'm rubbish at it, but it is good.
Right. Final question. Well, here we go. So, what school or society improvements would you make to promote greater well-being in young people? So, it's a very general question. Is there one simple magic bullet you've got, or two or three that you would suggest a school, or society in general could do to improve the well-being of all young people? Ban mobile phones, maybe?
No, I'm for
no.
mobile
okay.
phones.
Okay.
I'm okay about mobile phones. You know, everything used properly. Well-being is another one of those things. It's like resilience, you know, it's these words that are used and people don't always...
What does that mean?
Yeah, kind of thing.
Yeah.
So I have a bit of a thing mm-hmm. about what does well-being
oh,
mean
okay.
to
okay, go
people.
On. How do you define... How would you define it?
Well, I think for me, it's about... Because I think it goes hand in hand with resilience. So it's about young people who are able to safely kind of take risks and push themselves, but not do it like... Not take adverse sort of risks, you know, not take risks to the whatever level. So kids that are secure enough to be able to take risks and push themselves to do well, but understand that, you know, things don't always go well, and not for that not to kind of knock them completely. So
mm-hmm.
that's kind of what well-being would be for me.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, everything that's tied up in that is like your mental health and, you know, your kind of your emotional safety, those kind of things that I said before. And I think if those things are okay, then things like attainment, achievement, all those things come from it. So, like, I feel like that's the base thing that we need to work on. But I don't necessarily think that always has to be done with the young person. I think for me, it's families and communities are the main people that we need to work with around mm-hmm. that. I think, like, social work get a bad rep about being judgmental about, like, families and parenting in particular, but I think a big role that I see myself having is working with parents to really change that view of what social work maybe means around that and really support them instead of making them feel like they've got to jump through hoops, mm-hmm. if that makes sense. And mm-hmm. if we can work with young with parents from quite an early stage, then I just think that's going to always be more beneficial to their children.
So reducing the stigma around social work intervention.
I think so. But you know, doing it through the practice and through the actual, the how you deliver the service to families, because they have these notions that are right and proper, but if we can do things in a slightly different way, I think it can really change stuff. So I like did a thing called systemic training a few years ago, and that's really looking at the whole system around, it's not just the young person, it's the system around them, and that in order for things to be better for a young person, the system needs to change. Mm-hmm. And so that could be teachers, it could, you know, it's like adults around them, the parents around them, the community around them. That's the stuff that I think really can make a real change in children and mm-hmm. in their well-being.
Okay. And I suppose it's more of a political question, but is there anything that you can think of in terms of, like, wider society that would prevent the need or reduce the need for social work intervention in the first place?
Possibly still around, like, working with, like, parents, like, working with, but yeah, I don't know if that's not maybe like
proactive parenting skills.
I just think it's a really difficult thing, and you don't want to preach to people, and I've got kids, and I don't do it all right at all, but I just think there's something about understanding people's contexts and being able to work with them in their context rather than assuming that you have the knowledge about mm-hmm. it, really getting into communities and working mm-hmm. with them. So I think as well, like, we bang on again, like I was saying about well-being, but it doesn't translate in terms of, like, schooling, for instance. It's still, the emphasis is still on their attainment, and, you know, the what a school is measured by is the results mm-hmm. that the kids have got, which are massively important, but, you know, the curriculum for excellence says well-being is an important part, but the emphasis isn't there.
So
it doesn't quite fit.
Yes, and there's no congruence between what's said as being important versus what's actually treated as important.
And actually, you know, said is most important. You know, they say well-being is the most important thing, and yet that's not what we measure.
Yeah,
you know, children's kind of, their future outcomes are not based on that at all. Mm-hmm. You know, that's not what they measure it by. They measure it by how many A's mm-hmm. or, you know, whatever they
mm-hmm.
do. So it doesn't marry up for me. And that's like the early intervention thing. It doesn't marry up. People say that's the right thing to do, and yet they don't. Mm-hmm. You know, and I know loads of people say these things, but I'm really keen about how do we do that. And actually, Harlaw is a brilliant ASG for that, because mm-hmm. they really try and mm-hmm. work from an early intervention mm-hmm. point of view. They really mm-hmm. focus on well-being, I think, mm-hmm. In a really positive way. So,
yeah, good.
But they can't get away from the tables.
I know. Okay, well, hopefully things will change.
that is what we're here for.
Right, Lindsay, it's been a pleasure speaking to you. I really appreciate you giving up your time. Thank you very much.
No problem.
Is there anything else you want to add or say that you didn't get a chance to?
No, I ramble on quite a lot. Quite
concise.
If anyone wants to ask me more about that anything I've said, that's fine. But I think I'll leave it there.
Good. Right. Thank you. Over and out.